The following programming is sponsored by the Museum of Sports. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views of this station, its management, or Peasley Media Group.
Breaking news this afternoon out of the NBA, where the league has suspended 76ers star Joel Embiid for 3 games for shoving a reporter in the locker room over the weekend.
Every one of us is a walking museum of sports, from that first ball game with your parents to maybe getting that nervous, sweaty autograph, or maybe even taking your own kids to their very first game. It's the feeling we all get that brings us back to our own personal Philly Field of Dreams. And the Museum of Sports show is on the air and ready to go there with you. I'm Doug Scheimel. Our show dedicated to sports memories, memorabilia, and the museum that's going to capture it all at the South Philly Sports Complex. We're live on the Talk 860 and Museum of Sports Facebook pages, so take a look. Museum of Sports show is brought to you by the DePachi Franklin Cardiovascular Center. They are the specialists in non-invasive treatment. The Museum of Sports show, features every week from his sports cave in Villanova. He is our guide and mentor, Comcast Spectacor legend, founding vice president of the Philadelphia Flyers and creator of the Museum of Sports, and author of the wonderful book, Blades, Bands, and Ballers, How Flash and Cash Rescued the Flyers and Created Philadelphia's Greatest Showplace. Ladies and gentlemen, Philadelphia's greatest showman, Mr. Lou Scheinfeld. Hi, Lou.
Well, not having a good week. Thank God the Eagles won, because yes. Villanova has lost. Gave up 90 points to Columbia at home last night in a half-filled Vinerid Pavilion. I've never seen that before. 90-8, pardon me, they lost. Sixers are one. I'm getting all choked up. Sixers are 1-6, and there aren't much hopes to reverse that quickly. Maxey's out for a couple weeks now. Yep. George is in, but that's a little rusty. And Embiid, as the Daily News said the other day, let's three more games.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, coming up today, he made a career out of eating. It was a big part of the infamous Wing Bowl years. Now out with a new line of hot sauces, Mr. Bill El Wingador Simmons is on the Museum of Sports show for the first time. And our other guest, he went from collecting newspapers with his sports idols on the cover as a kid, and then wound up appraising sports collectibles for ESPN on TV. Les Wolf is back on the Museum of Sports show. And our king of sports collectibles, Nick DePaccia Jr., is going to be here to tell us what's hot, what's affordable in the memorabilia market, and how you can get a sneak peek of what will be in the Museum of Sports at the DePaccia Memorabilia Collection at their Sneak Peek Museum down in South Jersey. But up first, our complainer-in-chief, Lou Scheinfeld, thinks the Philadelphia Inquirer sports section has gotten a little too woke. Now, I know woke means many things to many people. I still don't know what it means, but go ahead, Lou.
Woke sports rhymes with joke. Okay. And that's what the Inquirer sports department has become, despite the fact that they've got some outstanding columnists. The Inquirer went on a mission a few years back. Fostered, festered, whatever it might be, by out-of-town people who we don't like. And they went on a mission to correct all the dozens of decades, hundreds of years that the Inquirer has come out and not unrepresented minorities, unrepresented females. The sports department got decimated. Dozens of veterans left, veteran writers on buyouts, and they went on a spree of correcting an inequity in gender and minority hiring in the sports department, which is fine. I totally believe in that. But they now run long, long stories on inconsequential topics. High school soccer, field hockey, women's field hockey, on and on and on. I don't mind reading these stories. Some of them are good, interesting, but don't take up 26 inches when 6 inches would do it.
Yeah.
And what's even worse is the early deadline. We had a Phillies game earlier this season that ended at 8:20. Yeah. Didn't have the story the next day. The time they close the paper deadline is so early. There's no way scores. There's no scores. They don't run standings. Yeah, they don't run box scores.
And you get the right through a day, 2 days later.
Well, yeah, you're right. 2 days later, you'll see it. But still, they won't run box scores or standings. You don't know what the Phillies' record is unless you read the story. You have to go online, which I do. I'm fortunately a little bit savvy with that, but that's not the role of my newspaper. And yet they run these full-page ads, full-page ads throughout the paper. Take one of those ads and shove it and run standings. I don't even know that Aaron Judge has 50-some home runs and 100-and-some RBIs late in the season. He could break another. I don't know that unless I go online. Now, is that my Inquirer? Now, look, I love the Inquirer. I've been reading it. I'm a subscriber. I worked for the Daily News for many years as a reporter, and it breaks my heart to see what's going on. Now, I don't know if he's still there, but they hired a sports editor from Connecticut who stayed there. And it really ticked off a lot of people. And I'm talking about some major writers at the Inquirer. I don't know if he ever moved here, but he was running the sports department, ruining from Connecticut. Now, I don't understand how you could do that stuff.
Well, it is at least there is a viable entity there.
You're right.
Print has suffered greatly in the last 30 years. Hey, we want to make sure our viewers and listeners go to themuseumofsports.org to make a tax-deductible contribution today so you can be part of Philly's Sports Shrine down at the redesigned South Philly Sports Complex. And we're going to be bringing some cool swag online for you when you donate. And make sure you buy Lou's book, Blades, Bands, and Ballers, by going to themuseumofsports.org. When we come back, sports collectibles guru Les Wolf, when the Museum of Sports show returns right here on Talk 860 and Facebook Live. Back in a moment.
It was 1967, and Philadelphia was in a rut. The economy, riots, Vietnam. That is, until the Broad Street Bullies rallied the region's spirits and brought more than 2 million into the streets to celebrate. You can read all about it in Lou Scheinfeld's candid memoir, Blades, Bands, and Ballers, available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble. You'll love the inside stories about Frank Sinatra, Ed Snyder, Bernie Parent, Frank Rizzo, Elvis Presley, the 76ers, Mick Jagger, Electric Factory Concerts, and Kate Smith. And you'll find out how Lou Scheinfeld helped Ed Snyder rescue the Flyers and, against all odds, got the Spectrum built. Blades, Bands, and Ballers. Get a signed first edition copy at themuseumofsports.org. Themuseumofsports.org. The book the Philadelphia Inquirer called a fascinating and hilarious read. Blades, Bands, and Ballers, an ode to a building that truly rocked.
The Museum of Sports show is presented by Depatchi Franklin Cardiovascular and Autonomic Center. Dr. Nicholas Depatchi is a caring specialist who uses natural antioxidants, nitric oxide, and anti-inflammatory agents to treat heart disease, hypertension, palpitations, and more with minimum medicines. To learn more, please call Dr. Nicholas Depatchi, MD-FACC, author of 4 books and over 100 articles and abstracts at 856-589-6034. That's 856-589-6034.
Did you miss a recent Museum of Sports show? No worries. You can see or listen to any of our previous shows on the Museum of Sports website or on our Facebook page. You'll love our lineup of great guests, including Merrill Reese, the Eagles' Vi Sekahema, Bill Berge and Kevin Riley, Flyers broadcasters Jim Jackson and Steve Coates, and the Phillies' always colorful Larry Boa. The Museum of Sports is on the air and Facebook, and you can join the fun every Thursday, 4 to 5 p.m. on WWDB 860 and Facebook Live.
But everybody loves playing sports. And because we love playing sports, we want to be connected to that athlete or person with our memorabilia, whether it be a card, whether it be a baseball bat, whether it be a jersey or a hat. This is what memorabilia is.
We're back on the Museum of Sports show here on Talk 860 and Facebook Live, brought to you by the Depatchi Franklin Cardiovascular Center. They are the specialists in non-invasive treatment. I'm Doug Scheimel, along with Lou Scheinfeld. Our first guest, you could say, conducted the original virtual sports auction by phone and fax. And that was back before Al Gore claimed to have invented the internet. And he's since then, he had been going around the country appraising sports artifacts for ESPN. And he's got Les Wolf Sports LLC, where you can check out everything you need to know about starting a collection, maintaining a collection. Ladies and gentlemen, a big Museum of Sports show. Welcome back to Mr. Les Wolf. Les, how are you, man?
Good. How are you? Nice to see you, Doug. Hey, Lou, what's happening?
Good to see you. Hey, you know, I think we said this or we discovered this the last time you were on. Your memorabilia collecting started the way a lot of people started it. You know, when you were a young, impressionable child, in your case, with an unhealthy fixation on the New York Yankees, and you would collect newspapers with their pictures on them, correct?
And the stories.
Why did you do that? I mean, I guess there wasn't a whole heck of a lot that you could just run out and buy of collectability. That was an easy one. It showed up at the front door.
Yeah, well, I was 6 years old. What did I know?
And then there's that.
Yeah, I didn't know any better.
But it was an easy thing to do.
Yeah, it was very easy.
Now, did you keep any of those?
No, what happened was my mom, may she rest in peace, was a neat freak. Oh, no. So she wouldn't let me keep it in the apartment. We had a little one-bedroom apartment. So in the hallway under the stairs, there was a radiator. So I hid them underneath the radiator until the super finally found them 3 months later. And that was the end of my my fixation with newspapers.
Now, would something that for folks out there who may have done exactly what you did and kept them and maybe not had them appraised, would you have any idea if they were in good condition? Because that's the one thing you harp on in your seminars. Condition, condition, condition.
Well, it's like real estate. Real estate, you hear location, location,
yeah,
location.
Exactly.
And so, memorabilia, I mean, and antiques, it's all about the condition. You know, mint versus fair or poor. I mean, you always hear the big dollars are being spent on mint condition baseballs, especially baseball cards. PSA 10s, forget about it. The numbers are bananas.
Yeah. Would clippings like those from back from what, late 50s, early
60s? This is the whole papers. It was 59. Yeah. It depends. Something historic has to happen. Some of them do have value. You know, like the Yankees winning the World Series in 61, right. The first man on the moon, JFK's assassination, you know, memorable stuff that happened in sports or in history.
Yeah, and if you can get them to coincide in the same day, that would be a jackpot, I would think. And so I know, I don't know if you can hear the clip because you were grabbing one of your collectibles back there. We used one of your clips from one of the seminars that you put on, talking about, you know, a passion for sports. And that's the common thread that seems to lure a lot of collectors. You know, it's I don't know how many people who get into memorabilia collection who are not passionate about sports, but you've probably run across some folks who are looking at it strictly as investment. They could give a damn what sport it was, what athlete.
Very rarely. I mean, you have guys like that, like Doc DiPacci, who's absolutely fanatical. Mm-hmm. And you know what? The best thing about meeting other collectors that collect everything, believe it or not, is the stories. I mean, whatever they collect is great, but when you hear the story, how they got it, you know, what they did to get to that point and to build their collection, it's just phenomenal. The stories at meeting the athletes, what it took to get them there. It's just great.
Yeah. Dr. DiPacci bought a Jonas Wagner card from nuns in Baltimore. Yeah. a rich man down there apparently gave it to them before he passed away. And he said, if you ever need serious money, he said you could sell this. So I think she was asking $215,000. He gave her $230,000. That's Dr. DiPacci.
It's considerably more now.
Oh, yeah. Now.
Oh, God, yeah. One of the things we were talking about just a second ago, condition, condition, condition. That's something you have harped on. And
absolutely.
It's not only buying things in a better condition, but it's also your ability to sort of keep things in good condition. Now, I don't know if we trotted out Lou's beach house autographed Muhammad Ali boxing glove story the last time you were on. Lou, why don't you refresh Les's memory?
Yeah, I had a pair of from the fight of the century, the boxing gloves signed by Muhammad Ali. I don't know if it was just Muhammad Ali. And I hung them on a nail at my beach house. And 2 years later, I took a look at them, and there was no autograph. The sun, the salt air had you talk about condition, man. That went from whatever to zero.
That's well, a pretty typical story, right, Les?
Yes. That's actually how I discovered how to properly protect. In my lecture, I do collect, invest, protect, and most important, preserve memorabilia. And one of the things is keeping it out of the sunlight, putting UV UV coating on your windows, putting it in the frame, proper lighting, LED lighting, because the lighting and the combination of the sun, and believe it or not, the temperature should always be 68 to 72 wherever you're housing memorabilia. Speaking of the doc, I remember he was on one of the TV shows, and the first thing I saw him have, he had a couple of very valuable old Yankee jerseys, Ruth and Garrick, in a box on the floor. Now, you never, ever want to keep stuff on the floor of value, because there's so many different ways that water can get to that, whether it be a sink pipe breaking, a toilet overflowing, a washing machine overflowing, or just rain or snow. You never know. Water seems to find whatever you have. And it's, you know, we had a kitchen sink, where a hot and water regulator underneath the sink. We went out one day and it broke it leaked. Leak from the kitchen to the basement. God. I had stuff on the wall that got damaged. So I'm constantly learning different ways to protect and preserve. And because of what I've learned and what I've experienced, you know, I pass it on. Gene Michael, who you may recall, the old Yankee general manager, I was called in by the insurance company. He had a massive flood in his basement because his pipes broke, and George wouldn't let him come home to take care of it. So I had to go in there with a mask and gloves and try to decipher what was on these baseballs. I mean, had he have taken care of them, put them up high, put them in plastic covering, double box them with acid-free plastic, he might have been able to save them. But at the point that they were in, they were gone.
So they go from valuable to literally worthless.
Yep, exactly.
Hey, Doug, we had somebody on last week or the week before, an artist, and he had a card that he's been saving. He hasn't asked to get. He hasn't valued it. Do you recall what card that was?
I'm trying to remember what it was, and I wrote it down too.
It was a really valuable
under
card.
Under glass
since he bought it, or since he came into possession of it. And we mentioned it to Tapachi's son, and he said several hundred thousand dollars.
Here we go. In 1979, Topps card, Wayne Gretzky rookie card, glass since he got it. And Nick DiPaci Jr., our King of Sports Collectibles, said that could be pretty staggering. So we're gonna get Perry Milo, who's the artist, down to Doc's place and have him take a peek at it. But what would you put a dollar figure on that one?
I think Doc's son was right on the money. Depends on the condition, but a mint one is a few hundred thousand.
Yeah, that was sort of what he was saying. Low six figures.
And that's why, I can't emphasize enough. You know, it's one thing to collect this stuff, spend your money, invest the money on this stuff. It's another thing to protect and preserve. I mean, I remember a collection in Connecticut. This man lived on the fifth floor of a six-story building, didn't have any air conditioning, was a heavy smoker. And he had me go into his closet to pull out all his stuff. Well, P.S., because of the heat, with no air conditioning, with smoke, this stuff was stuck to plastic sheets. It was stuck together. I think I paid him like $5,000 or $10,000. And I told him as I was leaving, I said, had you have taken care of it, it could be $50,000 to $100,000 you had here. Oh. I mean, it's sad. But people, not only collectors, you may have your family pictures or
everything,
your heirlooms not properly protected. I mean, I think that there's a lot of people that just, let me throw it in the trunk, put it in the attic and forget about it. Or put it in the basement. Well, that's the absolute wrong thing to do. Give me a call or email me, and I'll try to help you to protect it and preserve it. Because your memories is what this hobby and what this business is all about. And preserving your memories for your future family ancestors, is very important.
Protect and preserve is critical, but you also don't want to let that passion for your sport or passion for collecting to cloud your judgment in terms of what you collect. And maybe
absolutely. I had a friend I grew up with, because of the Hurricane Sandy, he lost most of his collection and his passion for collecting was gone. He sold it to another friend of mine. And I hate to see that, but that's, You know, when you have stuff that brings you down and you lose it because of fire or floods or anything, you got to just get right back up. Like if you fall off a horse, you got to get right back up and start collecting again and taking care of it.
Les, if you were a young guy and just starting out and you didn't have a lot of money, what would you look to get in cards, I would think?
That's a funny question. I've been asked that quite a few times. I would beg, borrow, and steal I beg and borrow money to get as many Mickey Mantle rookie cards. I had the opportunity when I was young. Tom Cattell, who was Mickey Mantle's first agent, got me a 53 Topps Mantle. He bought from Bruce Oren, who used to own stands across from Yankee Stadium. Yep. He had about a nice 50, 60 stack of Mantle 52s and 53s. The Mantle 53s were 100. The 52s were 200. If I would have known then what I know now, I would have begged, borrowed any amount of money to buy every one of those from him. Just threw them into a vault and never looked at it for another 50 years. And I would never had to work another day in my life.
When you were doing appraisals for ESPN's Memorabilia Roadshow, I mean, you had to have run across probably some pleasant surprises and some horror stories. Give me one of each. What was probably your most pleasant surprise, and what was the thing you were most against?
One of which was one of the curators of the museum, I think it was in San Diego, had Ted Williams's bat when he hit 400, 406, I believe it was. And that was in fairly good condition. As far as horror stories, you know, I heard a lot of people saying how they had floods and fires and they lost a lot of stuff. I can't think of one specifically, but those 3 months or 4 months that I was traveling around the country, I mean, I saw everything from a Michael Jordan game used uniform to Thurman Munson autographs, the Babe Ruth autographs, and the Ted Williams bat, which just blew my mind.
Oh, golly. The other thing you bring up very quickly before we do your quick show and tell with one of your own personal pieces of memorabilia, people take for granted bringing a Sharpie or a pen or something to get an autograph. There are certain pens and markers for certain surfaces of collectibles, correct?
Absolutely.
And what is it? What is it you got? You use Sharpie for what? Everybody thinks that's the cure-all.
Well, I've kind of gotten away from the Sharpie. The Stadler pen that I like to use, this is a permanent marker. It's a thinner marker, blue or black. Stadler, mm-hmm. Staedtler. Those are phenomenal. They're better than Sharpies. And recently, over the last few years, I've noticed from other collectors, a Zebra pen. Ballpoint pen they use on baseballs. I used to use the Bic extra fine point on a baseball, which is still good, but the Stadler pens are even better now.
Oh, wow. All right. Hey, Les, you went back into your vault there and brought out a little something. What do you have there? And how did you?
I just did the show at Hofstra and I bought from a gentleman that he had it from his grandfather. His father had gotten this. It's a baseball that's signed for the little center fielder from Babe Ruth. Now, most of the time you see see something autographed, he personalizes it to a specific name. And here we have for the little center fielder from Babe Ruth. I mean, to me, it's a great ball. You can easily see it. And it's just a nice ball, and it's now in my inventory to sell.
And were you able, just through research, to figure out to whom that was written?
Yeah. You know, you just look at it. You study it for a while. You can figure it out.
Oh, that's wild. And then what would something like that go for?
I'm asking $12,000 for it.
It's a bargain.
It's a very reasonably priced, very reasonable ball. And it's not a major league baseball and it comes with a JSA certificate. So, you know, you can't go wrong with it.
Exactly. And we got to ask you, Les, because this is the Museum of Sports show and we're finalizing a home down at the newly redesigned South Philly Sports Complex. So all that connective tissue between all the stadiums will become this vibrant home for all sorts of restaurants, shops, retail, hotels, and the Museum of Sports. What are your thoughts about Philly finally getting its own sports shrine, because you would have thought we would have had this decades ago?
I think Dr. Nick DiPaci is probably one of the greatest collectors I've ever met, one of the nicest men I've ever met, one of the most successful men, and he knows what he's doing. And I think it's a tribute to him to be able to have a museum showing off his stuff and stuff that he's acquired over his career. I just wish there was more collectors like him, the Marshall Fogels, Barry Halpern, may rest in peace, because they're the ones that keep this hobby going. And the Kendrick, the owner of the Arizona Diamondbacks, Ken Golden, who's a phenomenal auctioneer and collector himself. I mean, these are the kind of people that, you know, what this stuff is worth and appreciate it. I think, unfortunately, hopefully 50 years from now, everybody's going to still appreciate this stuff while we're gone. But I think preserving the history of sports, you know, through memorabilia is just great.
Absolutely. You can check out everything Les Wolf has got to offer at Les Wolf with two F's, sportsllc.com. Les Wolf, sportsllc.com. Memorabilia guru Les Wolf, thank you so much for coming back on the Museum of Sports
show. It's always a pleasure to be in between, to, you know, the great announcing Doug and a phenomenal person, Lou Scheinfeld.
Well, it'll keep you alive longer, if nothing
else. I'll have to have you back more.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, you know what?
We need all those platitudes.
When you're around icons like you guys are, you know, and have anything to do with Dr. DePacci, it's always a pleasure.
All right. Thanks. Les, love you, man. Hey, coming up, El Wingador himself, the Wing Bulls' inimitable Bill Simmons, when the Museum of Sports show continues right here on Talk 860 and Facebook Live, back in a couple of minutes.
Can you imagine Philadelphia without the Broad Street Bullies or its fabled Spectrum Arena? Well, it almost happened until Lou Scheinfeld and Ed Snyder, otherwise known as Flash and Cash, teamed up to rescue the Flyers and got America's Showplace up and running. It was 1967, and the world was in a whole different place. You can read all about it in Lou Scheinfeld's heartfelt memoir, Blades, Bands, and Ballers. Get a signed copy at themuseumofsports.org. Themuseumofsports.org. Blades, Bands, and Ballers. Now available. The Museum of Sports show is presented by DePacci Franklin Cardiovascular and Autonomic Center. Dr. Nicholas DePacci is a caring specialist who uses natural antioxidants, nitric oxide, and anti-inflammatory agents to treat shortness of breath, brain fog, chronic disease, autonomic dysfunction syndrome, and more with minimum medicines. To learn more, please call Nicholas DePacci, MD, FACC, at 856-589-6034. That's 856-589-6034.
Who remembers the Philadelphia A's or the Warriors or the old arena at 46th and Market? We do, and that's why the Museum of Sports is being planned for Philadelphia. What's it like to face a 100-mile-an-hour fastball, ride your bike up the Manayunk Wall, or drive in the Pocono 500? We've got rare items from Babe Ruth, Mike Schmidt, Chuck Bednar, Frank Perron, and Wilt Chamberlain. The Museum of Sports is on the air, and you can join the fun every Thursday, 4 to 5 p.m. on WWDB 860.
Five-time champion Bill Simmons, El Wingador, you're back for another event. You keep coming back, Bill.
Yeah, you know, here's the thing. I didn't want to. I didn't like the way things ended last year, but that's in the past. This is Wing Bowl 20. I need to be a part of this.
We're back on the Museum of Sports show, sponsored by the DePacci Franklin Cardiovascular Center. They are the specialists in non-invasive treatment. I'm Doug Scheimel, along with Lou Scheinfeld. Our next guest, you'll recognize him down there in the Zoom box here on Facebook Live. He sort of ate his way to fame and infamy as the five-time winner of the notorious WIP Philadelphia Sports Radio Wing Bowl in the late 1990s and early 2000s. He's actually been inducted into the Wing Bowl Hall of Fame, and I believe his banner still hangs up there on the rafters of the Wells Fargo Center. And in the intervening years, as he's been very open about, he had a couple of high-profile brushes with the law and authored a book from prison, Snow on the Barbed Wire. Well, now he is out with a very brushable line of hot sauces, a big first-time Museum of Sports. So welcome to Bill El Wingador Simmons. Bill, how have you been?
How you doing, Lou? How you doing, Doug? What's going on, guys?
So I got to say, now your claim to fame is those five championships. You bettered all of your other competitors for years in the Wing Bowl, and the Wing Bowl was kind of a unique project, thanks to Angelo Cataldi, and it was something that I guess others have imitated but never kind of duplicated. And how was it that you stumbled on that? I mean, did you, I know you love to eat, you love food. You say you wag your tail when you go into the store, but I mean, did this start when you were a kid? Cause you're 6 foot, what? 6'5", 330 still.
I'm 316 actually. 6'5", 316.
Wow.
But my doctor says, whatever you're doing, keep doing it. Cause I don't know a lot of 63 year old guys that weigh that much that's in as good a shape as you are. But I eat good. I try to stay away from fried foods now, but I do eat well.
Did it start when you were a kid? I mean, were you a big kid?
My mom told me a story when I was born. She thought, the doctor thought that I had two stomachs because she couldn't give me enough food formula. I'm talking maybe a couple months old.
Yeah.
And she's like, you were always crying. We thought something was wrong with you. You were always hungry. So the doctor's, it's 1961. So the doctor's like, listen, whatever you have for dinner, put it in the blender and just give it to him. So I started eating real food at a real young age and it satisfied me. So they thought I had two stomachs, but I just liked to eat back then.
Now, did you play sport? I mean, did you grow up, did you get tall and big pretty quick? Did you play football? Did you play sports?
Well, I played sports in high school. I played semi-pro baseball when I was 15 with my Uncle Carlos. I played in Puerto Rico. My mom is Puerto Rican. I'm half Puerto Rican. And I just love the game of baseball. And for the size that I am, I was never like a real big guy, but I was always tall and lanky. But I could play every position on the field. I could play shortstop, and I used to be able to run like a deer. I could still run. I just can't stop it this way.
Hey, Bill, tell us, like, what have you eaten so far today?
Oh, I took it easy today. I just, you know, a little wah-wah action. But I work doing concrete with Frank the Animal by Lois. I work with Frank, and we do concrete work. I drive a truck for him. So I kind of keep it limited because it kind of makes me tired if I eat too much. But when I get home, it's over. I mean, I'm going to be cooking a big meal in a few minutes after I get done with you guys. And, you know, I'll make my rice and my chicken, and I eat rice and chicken all the time. Chicken I eat every day. Spinach salad every day. I try to, you know, stay strong. I keep my body strong.
That's pretty damn good. That's how you got down to that svelte 315.
We'll go with that.
So what, I mean, did you do any sort of competitive eating competition before there was ever a Wing Bowl, or was that kind of the catalyst for it?
Never. I was just always a competitor. And I was asked to do this by the, you know, may rest in peace, Heavy Kevy, Kevin O'Donnell.
Right.
I ate a lot of food all the time. I just have a high motor. So I never stop. My son even tells me, my 18-year-old, he's like, Dad, you're not normal. You're like, I sleep 4 hours a night. I get up. I have no problem getting up. I have no problem going all day. I just have a high motor, and I just love to eat. So I don't know why I'm like this. My mother is like this. She's 84 years old. She still salsa dances twice a month. She doesn't stop. She drives to Harlem and visits her 86-year-old brother. So it's not – I guess it's in the blood. I don't know.
And so when, I guess, Angelo, the Wing Bowl started in what, mid-90s, late 90s?
93, well, 94? I got into a Wing Bowl 7. I didn't even know what it was.
Yeah.
I was asked to do it, Wing Bowl 7. I didn't know what it was. But when Heavy Kevy asked me, he said, you think you could do this? I said, I'll win. And he said, what makes you so sure? I said, I love chicken, number one. Number two, I'm a competitor.
Yeah.
And he's like, well, let's see what you got. So we went out. I ate dinner with my family. We went out after that. He got 150 wings. I ate about 30 of them. I said, look, I'm good. I'll win. And he's like, he got mad. He slams the table. He's like, you're going to embarrass me. I said, I got this. And I went my first year, and I blew everybody away.
And I know it was 5 championships.
Yes.
I know there is a way it has to be judged that it's properly eaten. I'm a very inefficient buffalo wing eater. I leave way too much on it. And a friend of mine is like, oh my God, why you left all that meat on there? I said, that's a lot of effort.
Well, you know, they died for a reason. So you might as well knock that out real good. But 90% of the meat's got to be off the bone. And I don't have a problem with that because my mom used to yell at me when I was a kid, but leave the bones alone, because I would bite the ends of the bones off. That's, you know, I would eat the marrow. I eat all that stuff.
You know, that's, it probably hurts going in. It's going to hurt coming out.
Nah, it's good. It's good. It's good.
All right. So you do the whole Wing Bowl thing, and then there's some intervening years in the early 20 teens. And in just a couple of years ago, you get in a little bit of trouble. And
yes.
You sort of wrote a book about it, some of which I'll share the cover here. Tell me, just in brief, what happened and what kind of drove it? Was it kind of a just an income thing or an opportunity thing?
It was not known. It wasn't. Are you still there?
Yeah, we're bringing up that book cover. It takes a moment. There it is.
Okay, so a lot of things happened for me. I had a restaurant in Philadelphia, and my aunt and uncle were my partners, and we were doing well with it, so well that they kind of was deceptive about things. I don't like to talk about that because I don't like to throw people under the bus. But I ended up losing the restaurant in around 2007, I think it was, because there was a lot of money missing. It was mismanaged. There was a lot of things that weren't doing right.
Yeah.
So I ended up losing it. So I jumped back into a truck. Well, I was always working anyway. I was still driving a truck. But it just, like, the recession hit in 2008. Yeah. I just couldn't make ends meet with the money that I was making. I wasn't educated enough at that time to learn how to get out of this myself. So me being a street guy, I kind of had to go underground and try to hustle underground. And it got me jammed up. And I got arrested. And I did 2 years in New Jersey State Prison. I knew when I got there that I had to make myself smarter. I got into a fist fight with a gentleman the first month I was there over the television set. So I decided right there and then, hell with the TV. I went to the law library. I went to the general library, and I read close to 80 books in 2 years.
Yeah.
I wrote a business plan. I ended up writing a book. I read books on business. I read books on people that bit down and out. Colonel Sanders, Steve Jobs, biographies that showed me that this can be done.
Yeah.
And
no, on the barbed wire. You basically dictated that from prison with Joe Valley.
Yeah, Joe Valley was my partner back then. He came to visit me. I had wrote it inside on the legal pads. I was writing in the dark because it was therapeutic for me to write it. It made me feel better. But it was something that I just wanted to tell the story.
Right.
There's no justification in what I do. It's just I got a little bit of cowboy in me. When things go upside and, down.
So you've always sort of had that kind of entrepreneurial.
I've always had
that sort of entrepreneurial spirit.
I believe in opportunity. I'm a motivator when it comes to manifestation. I see how people do things. It helped me reading a lot to know that anything is possible. I mean, everything starts with an idea, and I got millions of ideas all the time. This is half the reason I don't sleep, because I'm always thinking. I write down notes. I put things together, and I try to make it work. Now, when I came up with the name The Wingador, I changed The Wingador to El Wingador. And it had a ring to it. And I told my wife at the time, I said, I'm going to make El Wingador a household name. I said, I'm going to win this thing. And I said, and when I did, I go, oh, man, that was easy. I'm going to win a few more times.
Yeah.
I said, and I did. And I had my own restaurant. I had a chicken wing through Rustelli Foods, through the direct line that goes right to your house, the El Wingador pre-cooked wing. I had the sauce company with my wife.
You got the sauce, which we're showing a picture of.
So I changed the name to Champions Blend because I branded the name El Wingador.
Yeah.
Because what we're doing now with this is, like, we're having events called the WWC. It's called the Wingador's Wing Challenge. Closest thing that I can do to Wing Bowl without using the name Wing Bowl. And we visited a lot of these bars and taverns to have these events. Yeah. And everybody's telling me how famous they are for their wings, the Piccalilli number one. So I said to my partner, I said, you know, I'm a wing champion. Why don't we take their famous wings and put it under our brand? So we started talking to them. They love the idea. So we just signed on with the Piccalilli, and we're going to do Piccalilli sauces. under the Wingador brand. And I have two more sauces coming out real soon. Right now, I have the Champions Blend.
Yeah, and that's what we're showing. That's what we're showing on.
Oh, it's fabulous too. It's so good.
It is. Hey, Bill, I just want to go back a little bit. How did you deal with the food when you were away?
I didn't. It was I went in at 343 pounds. I came out at 262.
Whoa.
Yeah, it was a big time weight reduction. The only thing I gained was knowledge, but I lost weight. I did go to the gym. They don't give you anything to eat. I think they only give you like 1,200 calories a day. They pretty much starve you. Now, I was hungry for 2 years.
Oh, man.
You know, I was telling my son just today, one of the COs would look after me. And he's like, Wingador, I need you to come in my office and clean the office. I got paid like a dollar a day.
Yeah.
So I'd go in there and he goes, start with the microwave. So I would open the microwave and there's a cheesecake in there. He goes, look, my wife made that for you. So I cleaned that one first.
Oh, that was nice.
Yeah, he's retired now. His name was Fish. They called him Fish, Fisher.
Oh, that's pretty wild.
But the food in there was terrible. Sunday was chicken day. You got a little drumstick and a thigh. And when you eat the chicken, the bones were black.
Did the guys in the big house know who you were and what you were known for?
Some of them did. Some of them didn't. But I was definitely targeted by both inmates and by both COs because they were harder on me. So I kind of just stayed away from everybody, you know, kind of just stayed in my lane. But yeah. I did have maybe four or five different fist fights. I can fight a little bit. So, but you know, that I broke my jaw. I broke my knuckles. Joe Valley would actually come to visit me and he would look at me and I had a black eye and he's like, yo, you all right? I'm like, I'm just fighting. You know, so, but you know, you got to do what you got to do. I mean, yeah. I was brought up in a way that I was prepared for it.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, before we go, I got to ask you, do you have anything in your memorabilia closet? I didn't know if you, because we're going to ask our King of Sports Collectibles in the next segment, if there is any collectability to Wing Bowl stuff. And I didn't know if you kept stuff like your crowns and your capes and everything else.
Well, I'll tell you, and my kids are like, Dad, don't get rid of it. I have my robes, custom made robes. I have sneakers that say El Wingador embroidered in the back that I did the Wing Bowls in. But I do want to donate something to them. I think I still have crowns at my ex-wife's house. My son's going to look for me. But I never really kept a lot of that stuff. Nothing really phases me like that. Like I one guy wanted to buy my robe for $5,000 and I was going to sell it to him. And my wife at the time says, you're not selling anything. Like you're not getting rid of anything. So I still have stuff.
Yeah. Cause that would be interesting. We're going to ask, our King Sport. You said, so you got, you have your custom El Wingador robe. You got your crown. What else did you have that you made custom?
I have boxing shorts that I did celebrity boxing in. They were custom made for me out of Philly. The Everlast robe that I have, they told me that was they only made three gigantic robes, Everlast, Butterbean, George Foreman, and El Wingador.
Yeah.
Those three biggest robes they ever made. So I still have that one. I may donate that one. I have to find it, but I will donate that one.
Well, I'll tell you what, Bill, we got to go to break. Can you hang with us? I don't know if you got to run off someplace.
No, I'm good. I'm good.
Can you hang with us through the break and we'll get a quick scare the crap out of your spot appraisal from our King of Sports Collectibles after the break?
You got it. No problem.
That'd be really cool. The inimitable Bill El Wingador Simmons is going to stay with us through the break to see if there's some collectability to El Wingador Wing Bowl stuff when the Museum of Sports Show comes back with our King of Sports Collectibles right here on Facebook Live and Talk 860. Back in a minute.
Thanks.
Excellent. Oh, Bill, thank
listen,
you.
I got a story for you.
Yeah.
Do you know a Doug McKeon?
Or no.
A Daniel Slavik?
Mm-mm.
Slaydick.
Would He's I know him from here?
No, they were Hollywood producers. Doug McKeon was the kid that played the little boy on Golden Pond, the blonde-haired kid.
Really?
Can you imagine Philadelphia without the Broad Street?
or its fabled Spectrum Arena? Well, it almost happened until Lou Scheinfeld and Ed Snyder, otherwise known as Flash and Cash, teamed up to rescue the Flyers and got America's showplace up and running. It was 1967, and the world was in a whole different place. You can read all about it in Lou Scheinfeld's heartfelt memoir, Blades, Bands, and Ballers. Get a signed copy at themuseumofsports.org. Themuseumofsports.org. Blades, Bands, and Ballers. Now available. The Museum of Sports Show is presented by Depatchi Franklin Cardiovascular and Autonomic Center. Dr. Nicholas Depatchi is a caring specialist who uses natural antioxidants, nitric oxide, and anti-inflammatory agents to treat shortness of breath, brain fog, chronic disease, autonomic dysfunction syndrome, and more with minimum medicines. To learn more, please call Nicholas Depatchi, MD, FACC, at 856-589-6034. That's 856-589-6034.
Hey, buddy, what can I get you? How about the ultimate sports memorabilia basement?
Yeah, well, welcome back to the Museum of Sports Show on Talk 860 and Facebook Live. I'm Doug Scheimel along with Lou Scheinfeld. Museum of Sports Show brought to you by the Depatchi Franklin Cardiovascular Center. They are the specialists in non-invasive treatment. Up next, he is our king of sports collectibles, whose family has the world's largest and most valuable sports memorabilia collection, valued well in excess of $50 million. And they are our proud partner in the Museum of Sports that we're finalizing a home in the new South Philly Sports Complex. Say hi to Nick Depatchi Jr., everybody. Hey, Nick.
Hey, guys. How you guys doing?
How you doing, man?
Right. One of our first-timer guests on, Mr. Bill El Wingador Simmons. That's Nick Depatchi Jr. right there. And I was going to ask you, Nick, about collectability of El Wingador and Wing Bowl stuff. Bill says he's got a lot of custom-made stuff. And Bill, tell Nick some of the custom-made stuff that you have.
Well, Everlast made me a robe years ago for one of the Wing Bowls I walked out in, and it was an Everlast robe. They told me it was the third biggest robe they've ever made. They made one for Beetlejuice, Butterbean, George Foreman, and El Wingador. I had that one, and then I have a custom-made one that was made by a lady that did a lot of stuff in France. It cost me, back in the day, like almost $1,000 to get it made. It's beautiful. It's embroidered, the chicken hawk. It's got the cow on it. It velcros the cow on it. You open it up. That's it. It's crazy. I mean, I got a lot of offers for people to buy that. But
so, Nick, what do you think on something like that? The Everlast robe or the other custom El Wingador robe? What would you think on that? Is there a collectability there?
Yeah, there's collectability, definitely. The market would be mostly the Philadelphia sports community. Because obviously Wing Bowl is huge here, but there's definitely collectability with a Philadelphia sports fan.
What would you think on the Everlast robe, the one that he only made two other ones for Butterbean and Larry Holmes?
George Foreman.
I could see the robe going for like between $1,500 and $2,500.
Really?
Wow, really?
Yeah, I could see that.
That's pretty good. Wow. What are some of the other things you got, Bill?
I have some Nike sneakers they made with the one says L and the other one says Wingador in the back, embroidered. I have another set of Nikes that say El Wingador. I fought in those and I ate chicken wings in those. I got to find those.
They're versatile is what you're saying, Bill.
Yeah, they're probably in a shed. They're in a shed somewhere. Yeah. But I have old shirts that I wore, that have the Wingador names on it. I mean, I don't know. I really never saved a lot of stuff. The robes, they're packed away. I got crowns. I have a belt somewhere.
So what do you think, Nick, on the, like crowns and a crown and a belt? What do you think that would go for?
That wouldn't go for as much as the robe. I think the robe is the centerpiece of it, especially because there's only two made in the world. And it's got more of a display appeal to it. Yeah. But the belt and the sneakers, I mean, I could see them going for $300-$400.
Oh, that's not bad. What about general while we still have Bill before we let him go, what about general Wing Bowl collectability? Because Lou, you've talked about having, a portion of the museum that would occasionally, feature the Wing Bowl because nobody else did anything like that.
Yeah, that was a major thing for many, many years. I mean, it started at 5 a.m. and it was sold out.
Yeah.
They had 19,000 crazies, guys coming home from work, going right there, and then leaving there and going right to a strip joint. So this was culture back then for South Philly. But, and then, of course, Bill made it, put it on the map with by being such a great personality and a champion eater. You know, he just wasn't coming in there looking, like a guy, and expecting to be rewarded. He earned it with all that stuff he ate. So it was a phenomenon. I was sorry to see it end, but that WIP felt it had run its course.
Yeah.
So, Nick, what do you think collectability for Wing Bowl stuff?
Oh, as Lou was saying, it would be a great display in the museum in the Philadelphia area. It's a staple of the sports scene here. It was always the week before the Super Bowl or the weekend of the
Friday before the Super Bowl. Yeah.
The Friday before the Super Bowl. So it's, and WIP, it's got a huge tie into Philadelphia sports.
And it was basically done in lieu of the absence of in lieu of the fact that nobody was winning championship trophies until they finally won in 2018, the Eagles.
Right.
Well, that's true. You won more championships.
Well, Bill Elwingador, Bill Elwingador-Simmons. Yeah, right. Bill Elwingador-Simmons, thank you so much, man. And
you're welcome.
When you get some of that out of the closet there, we'll have you come back on. Maybe you can model some of that. We'll have Nick do an official appraisal.
If it still fits, no problem. It's no problem.
All right, Elwingador, thank you for having me. Thank you, man. And thank you, guys. Elwingador sauces and
Elwingador.com
on the barbed wire.
Yes. Thank you, guys.
Absolutely. Thanks, Nick. Or thanks, right. Thanks, Bill. Hey, Nick, so what's been going on down the museum? I saw you guys honored the oldest living member of the Philadelphia Eagles with your Hall of Fame. Is that right?
Yes, that was exciting. I have to get my phone out.
Joe Pagliari, is that right? Okay. Is his name? And he's well into his 90s.
Yes. No, and that was exciting. He's between him, Sonny Hill. I mean, those guys are like walking history right there.
And that's how did you find him? I didn't know if he'd, I had honestly, I was not aware of him. Lou, had you heard of him?
I knew the name, but I didn't know anything about him.
Yeah. But you inducted him into your, sort of the Museum of Champions there, I guess. And that, that's pretty significant. And I heard an interview with him. He's, he's a spry fellow with, we've got a picture here holding his, award there.
Oh, yeah. Cool.
It's fascinating. He's fascinating. We're starting to build a really nice Hall of Fame. We have Harold Carmichael along with him in it. Tony Ricca, a former WWE personality, also known as the Pharaoh, and Sonny Hill. So we're starting to get a nice collection of great human beings, not just great athletes, but great human beings.
Is that the award you gave him, or is that something you had in your collection?
That right there is something we already had in the collection.
Okay, yeah.
But we are giving him an award.
Excellent. Oh, that's phenomenal. Now, I'm looking at a couple of other things you guys have just uncrated here. That's a green 44 jersey.
That's Retzlaff. Is that Retzlaff?
Is that Retzlaff?
Pete Retzlaff.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that's wonderful. And I see written on the box below it, Bednarik Hall of Fame jacket. Is that a correct label for that?
That is in the collection.
You're right.
Those are all game worn uniforms. As Lou always likes to point out, everything is game worn. Some of it's one of a kind or the best known example of its kind.
And signed. Yeah.
You can't just buy these in stores.
Yeah, I got a Jalen Hurts there. Is that recently uncrated or has that been out on the mannequin for a while?
That's recently uncrated with the pants. That's his pants too.
Look at the original helmets, man. Wow.
Whose helmet is that? Do we know? I'm looking on your...
Off the top of my head, I'm not sure.
Took a lot of hits, though.
Yeah. No, it's definitely game worn.
that's another period jacket there. And this stuff is still coming out of the boxes. This is the magical thing about the Depatchi collection and what'll be housed at the Museum of Sports, because it will literally change. It could change monthly if it needed to be, right, Nick?
Oh, of course. But you'll always, I mean, not always, but you come back and you're going to see something new. Obviously, we're not going to change it every day, but we are going to change the displays regularly.
Yep. And you can go to depatchimuseum.org to schedule a private sneak preview tour of what will be in the Museum of Sports. And they'll squire you around and show you what it looks like when Doc Depatchi's collection explodes. Hey, guys, that's all the time we've got for this week. We want to thank our guests, memorabilia guru Les Wolf, King of Wings, Bill Elwingador Simmons, and, of course, our King of Sports Collectibles, the one and only Mr. Nick Depatchi Jr. And don't forget to buy Lou's book, Blades, Bands, and Ballers. You can get a custom autographed copy by going to themuseumofsports.org and check for updates on cool swag we're going to be offering very, very soon. Museum of Sports Show brought to you by the Depatchi Franklin Cardiovascular Center. They are the specialists in non-invasive treatment. For Lou Scheinfeld, Nick Depatchi Jr., I'm Doug Scheimel, reminding you of what our good friend Carly Simon always says, Louis.
These are the good old days.
They sure as hell are. Have a great weekend, everybody.
You guys, hey, Nick.